Skyline's new chicken chili is here. Now you can enjoy that legendary Skyline taste with a new protein option. Try Skyline's chicken chili on Waze, Coney's, and all your Skyline favorites. Feeling good. It's Skyline time.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, everyone. Today is Wednesday, November 8th. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Kevin. I'm here with Darren. Everyone, please listen to us any way you get your podcast. Like, subscribe. Give us a share. We need that stuff. Follow us on Facebook. Like us. Talk to us. Send us questions. Listen, NFL Week 9 is in the books. College football, it's down to the final stretch. They have 3 weeks left of the regular season. We got a lot of other stuff we're going to talk about, but we're going to start with the Jets and the Giants. Both team with bad losses this week. The Giants now just about done. The Jets, with a bad offensive line and bad QB play, are going to try to keep this together to get in the playoffs. But this was a bad loss because this could be one of the tiebreaker teams that they're going to be worried about, the Chargers. Chargers wind up beating the Jets 27-6. Austin Eckler ran for two TDs. Darius Davis had a returned 87-yard punt return for a touchdown. Zach Wilson was sacked 8 times. The Jets fumbled 4 times. The Jets were 3-for-17 on third downs and 0-for-2 in the red zone. Listen, Zach again showed no pocket presence at all. Kev, let's get it going. Jets.
Okay, start with the positives first. The defense played great. That might be about the only thing we can take out of this. Five sacks on only about 30 dropbacks. They gave up the touchdown drive that they gave up was 50 yards after the Zach, has his lunch money stolen by Joey Bosa. That's what it looked like. That's what it reminded me of in the schoolyard. Bosa just said, "Give me the ball," and Zach said, "Okay." And then the only real drive they gave up was the field goal drive in the fourth quarter that took forever and pretty much assaulted the game away. Otherwise, they held Herbert to a career low in yardage, no touchdowns. I mean, another great job by the defense. The offense, we've talked about Zach ad nauseum almost every week this year, almost every week last year when Zach started. So I'm not going to beat a dead horse. We all know Zach's limitations. The problem is that this team needs to play almost perfect on offense to have a chance to win. And this week they were far from perfect. The penalties, it seemed like every time we had a positive play, Breece Yard, a 14-yard run, completed a pass, this, that, there was a penalty on not even the linemen, on the receivers. I've never seen a game where it's not pass interference, but Alan Lazard, who may have had the worst game I've ever seen a wide receiver have, he had 3 penalties, 2 catches, 1 drop. Ruckert had 2 penalties. Garrett Wilson had a penalty. And none of these by the receiver, the tight ends, were pass interference. That's what makes it even harder to fathom. The offensive line was awful. Part of it is Zach. He held the ball too long. But we've said that all year. Darren, I'll let you start with your thoughts.
I'm going to give you a couple quick stats just because these are interesting to me. The 2023 Jets are the only team in the Super Bowl era that has 5 sacks, hold an opponent to under 200 total yards, not allow a play of 25-plus yards, and lose the game by more than 20 points. That's how hard that is to do. Fucking impossible. My God. Watching this team's unbelievable on offense. Just unbelievable. 8 touchdowns this season, 3 since the Chief game. All 3 one-play drives. A 72-yard run by Breece, a 50-yard screen to Breece, and the one against the Eagles where they let him score at the end of the game. One-play drives. They haven't had more than a one-play touchdown drive since the Chief game. Again, hard to do. Billy Turner, I don't even know what they're watching. How does he play? How does anyone see this guy playing? How do you put Mitchell, who's never played guard in his life and only took a few snaps in preseason, how does he play guard? He doesn't have a pull. He's never had a pull in his life. Now you got this guy pulling? You got Mitchell, you got Turner getting beat like a rented mule out there at right tackle. Anytime somebody wanted a sack, they just went out there. And the other liability on the line, to be honest, not really as Mitchell as much as Laken Tomlinson just sucks. He's been the most overpaid, overrated signing I think we've had in forever. He's just been god awful. Tippin did a good job up the middle. You know, I thought Mekhi was fine. This team, the game turns early, right? The Jets actually, you know, they get the Chargers, or they get the ball right away. They start a drive. They actually convert the they punt. The 87-yard punt return by Darius Davis is just awful. He Morstead actually punted it too far.
Outkick the coverage.
My God, just brutal. And you're like, oh God, all right. But the Jets' defense was so good, you couldn't leave the game. You felt like there was always a chance they were going to come back. So they start a drive. They convert a third down. And then Garrett fumbles at the 29. That was awful. It just set up – I mean, they were moving the ball. You had no confidence they were going to score a touchdown, but it looked like a field goal was in line. Then, you know, they get a three and out. They get the ball back. They do another drive. They get to the Charger 42, and Zach gets sacked by Bosa, fumbles at midfield. This was the drive where Mosley kind of screwed it up. He gave up on the third and long. He had Eckler. Yeah, he never turned around. Eckler caught that screen pass. And from there, it was just like, my God. It was 14-0. Then the Jets come down. They set up the drive after the three and outs back and forth and a couple things. They get the field goal, which he wanted to be a touchdown. But, you know, whatever. They get the field goal, cut it down to 14-3. Then they get a stop, get the ball back. And Davis gets another return out to the 47, sets him up for another field goal, and just takes the momentum away again, 17-3. The whole first half, the special teams and offense were just that bad. The defense played great all night. I mean, I never saw Herbert in this much duress ever. G, thoughts?
At what point do they have to go to Trevor Siemian for a half, a quarter, a spurt? Just to try to spark something on this team, because
last week in halftime,
what?
He's not even dressed. He's still on the practice squad.
They only have Boyle dressed.
Yeah,
because don't you have to try something with this offense? The defense is too good to just go this whole year playing freaking Zach Wilson and not just letting this go.
What I will tell you is that I thought they did try something on offense. They did run some up-tempo. They did run some no huddle, which is where Zach in the fourth quarter has had some success. I didn't mind them trying to change up the tempo. They did try something.
I hope you're not talking about the last drive.
No, not the last drive.
The whole game, really. The whole game. Right. The whole game, they played no huddle the whole game.
Well, they huddled up some. They changed up the tempo.
They started from the beginning is my point.
Yeah, but they tried something at least to try to spark it. And Billy Turner, like you said, Darren, I had the notes on Billy Turner too. I wanted to let you do it. I mean, Billy Turnstile might be the better name for him. The way they were just going all around him. Like you said, the best offensive lineman they had Monday night was Tippmann.
Tippmann? And I thought Becton was okay. I didn't think he was awful. They kind of picked on the other side a lot more. Most of the sacks came the other way.
And like I said, I'm not going to pick on Mitchell because he should be out in right tackle.
He's not a right guard.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, the Jets had four fumbles. They lost three. The Chargers had three fumbles and lost none. Another big thing, because there was a play where Clemens could have dove on the ball and said he tries to pick it up like a hero and Herbert takes it back. That's a game-changing play. This team is so weak offensively that they have to force turnovers to win. If they don't, they will not. And that was kind of situation that they dealt with. Whitehead dropped another pick, hit him right in the hands. You got to catch that. That's early in the game. There were so many opportunities to get a turnover, and they just couldn't pull it off. And it was frustrating. They actually converted a couple third downs to the kid, to 82. Why am I blanking on the name? The punt returner.
Gibson had a couple.
Gibson. He had two of the three third down receptions. But, you know, Hall runs for 20, block in the back. Hall gets a screen for 14 yards, and it's
illegal
shift because he can't set. It's like Lazard dropping passes. Uzoma drops the pass at the end. Not that it matters, but still, Zach actually hit him. It would have been a touchdown.
Yeah, but I have that down here too. Right in the end zone, right in his numbers, right over the chest. And he just flat out drops it. He was wide open.
At some point, I mean, G, I'm going to let you go talk on this point here. Some point it falls on the coach. Some point it falls on the play caller. And at some point it falls on the GM. Listen, the quarterback position is weak. And everybody, and Jet fans, to me, be honest, more worried about being right about Zach, whether he sucks or he's good, than realizing that you don't have much of a freaking choice. They're playing him. So you have no choice but to root for him. I'm not trying to say that I think Zach is good. When you score 8 touchdowns in 8 games, you're not good. You're not good. Yeah, I mean, offenses are down. Don't get me wrong. But I'm watching Dobbs run around in Minnesota. He's been on the freaking team four days. He's leading for – he's turning it over and leading for touchdowns. But at least he's doing something. I'm watching my quarterback stand there in the pocket, and they're telling me how he's improving, and he doesn't throw interceptions, but he doesn't get rid of the ball. You know, I mean, G, Kev, coach, offensive coordinator, GM, thoughts? Start with you, G.
I think, one, I mean, as a non-Jet fan, I'm getting tired of Salah saying the same bullshit now for 2 years. And listen, I know the deal, all right? They didn't think Zach was good last year. They made the trade for Aaron Rodgers and all went to hell. I get it, okay? But, you know, Zach is not good. The offensive line is a mess. And, you know, all I hear out of Salah's mouth is, you know, our defense is beating these quarterbacks. And, you know, Zach's we have faith in Zach and he played well. Come on. I mean, at some point, this routine gets tiring. I mean, Zach is not good. And listen, I am not telling you that Trevor Siemian should start next week. That's not what I'm saying. But in a game like last week where halfway through the game, you knew Zach was just not in rhythm. He's overthrowing receivers. He's showing bad judgment with the ball still. You know, you could go to him for a quarter if you had to, Siemian. You could go to somebody else for a quarter and try to spurt the team into a different direction. But, you know, you have no other guy you can go to at the moment. And Salah seems like he's set on playing Zach. I mean, you know, and listen, I don't want to go down the other road, but you know what? Carson Wentz was signed this week to be the backup for Stafford. So apparently he does want to play some football, maybe, right? The Vikings traded for Dobbs. So there were other quarterbacks out there. The fact of the matter is the Jets wanted to stick with Zach. And it's a shame because this defense is way too good to have him be your quarterback and go through this garbage. Now you're at 4-4 through 8 games. I mean, it's crazy, Kev.
I think, you know, if you think back when Rodgers first got hurt, I think Darren and I both were one of the ones that said, you know, we would have been fine signing Carson Wentz.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would have been a better option than Trevor Siemian.
Well, you know, I'm jealous of Matt Barkley. I'm jealous of Matt Barkley because I know he can throw the ball.
Trevor Siemian hasn't started in one since 2017.
Yeah. And he wasn't good then.
Yeah.
I mean, here's where the Zach thing I lose. As much as I want him to do well and as much as I think he's trying, he just doesn't have it. He doesn't have any pocket presence. So there's the third down play. And he has a chance to scramble for the first down, but chooses to flip to Carter, who has Murray draped all over him. Carter catches the ball, 3-yard play. Now, you know, I'm hearing things that, oh, there's a couple of the guys coming. He may not have gotten there. So what? So he gets 6 out of the 8 and it's 4th and 2. Now I'm in position to go for it. If I want to, I'm down 14 already. I'm not going to kick a field goal 4th and 1, 4th and 2. Maybe I kick it a 4th and 4 or 4th and 6 like we were, but I wouldn't have done it at 4th and 2. I would have tried to go for it. And the one play that was really cool was when they actually did the direct snap to Breece. It was like a little bit of a change of pace, and he got it. Not by a ton, but he still got the first down. It's nice to see that they can do these things. They're playing 3 tight ends, but they don't throw to Conklin until the game's too late. God forbid you throw to him. He's your second best receiver. It's like Kelsey went off on this defense. Kelsey went off. He had 12 for like 157 or whatever the hell it was. So they can't cover the tight end. And we don't throw to Conklin to the last drive, really. We had six attempts toward him. He caught all six of them for 66 yards and got stopped at the one because he doesn't have to run a pattern deep enough into the end zone.
The last play of the game.
And you laugh. It's like, how do you, they don't run patterns deep enough. The receivers don't do anything. Garrett had a couple drops. Lazard was awful. Brees, I thought, was doing what he could. Enough of the Dalvin Cook stuff. Let's see what Izzy's got. Let's see if Abinakonda can do. Because, you know, might as well. I mean, you know, what he got to lose? But you watch this team, and Joe Douglas, to me, there's got to be a bit of an indictment on this guy. The O-line hasn't gotten better. He refused to get a better quarterback. He's refused to get a better quarterback for the better part of 3 years now. Listen, you want to tell me year one, you don't count against Zach, fine. You want to tell me year two, you don't count against it? I say bull. Because you know what? You replaced him with Mike White the minute you could. Then you don't bring back White.
And Joe Flacco, by the
Rodgers.
Way.
They went out and got Rodgers. So you give him the benefit of that. Rodgers goes down. You know what you have in Wilson. You think he might be getting better, but you know that you need someone reliable. And they don't have his Boyle. And everybody we've taken from these Packers all suck. Lazard's been awful. Billy Turner's a nightmare. Cobb has the most drops per pass in the league. And Boyle can't even see the field. So I don't even know what the move was for these Packers.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Saleh. I really do. And I want him to succeed. But the fact of the matter is, his record is that he shouldn't survive after this year if this team doesn't make the playoffs or at least finish above 500. He should go. He should go. And despite the great draft that Douglas has had, he should go too.
Do you think the Aaron Rodgers injury in week one winds up giving Saleh another year?
I think if it does. Aaron wants him, yes.
If Aaron makes a statement, in my opinion,
they're both there.
Okay.
This is like Aaron Rodgers is the owner of this team now.
I know.
It's so sad. But you look at this defense again. 10 points off special teams, the punt return and the other punt return that gave him two plays for a field goal. 14 off of turnovers. One was a 50-yard drive. You give him a little bit of a breakdown, the third and long that they got. The other one was a 2-yard drive. They gave up 3 points the whole freaking game, and they lost by 21. I mean, the defense didn't do anything wrong. Jermaine Johnson's all over the field. Franklin Myers actually woke up for this game. He was good. Huff's a madman as a pass rusher. You know,
Huff needs to be resigned.
Yeah, Quinn and Ashton. We got our first personal foul call on a hit on the quarterback in 3 years. That was pretty exciting when Zach actually got shoved by, I think it was Bosa. I mean, you know, there were things that kind of went right, but, you know, this team was just infuriating to watch. Kev?
And please, don't take this as I'm making excuses, because I'm not. But, Darren, you brought the thing. 7 fumbles in the game, 6 of them recovered by the Chargers.
Yeah,
that's not going to happen. Garrett Wilson's fumble right near the sideline. If it takes a little extra bounce to the right, it's either out of bounds or Derwin James doesn't recover inbounds. We're that close.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Zach fumble, I mean, like I said, Bosa just took the ball away from him. Everett fumbles for the Rams in their own end of the stadium, in their own end of the field. And Davis is right there to fall on it.
Yep.
No, bad luck.
He was the only Charger around.
Herbert's fumble that, like you said, Clemens was right there. Fall line it. I mean, he's trying to pick it up to try to score, but fall line it. He got the ball at the 11. No, Herbert recovers. Then later on, you had the Davis muff punt. Again, no Jet was around. That would have given them good field position. So like I said, these are not excuses, but when you're the Jets, you need these breaks to go your way as well to have a chance. None of the breaks went their way. The offensive line was bad, and all the penalties that they did to themselves. I mean, the combination of all three gave them no chance to win this game.
I'm sitting here hoping for Dwayne Brown's return. I can't believe it. I can't believe I'm rooting for Dwayne Brown to get back. I can't wait for Roger Saffold to get into the position to play guard. This is how bad it is on this offensive line. I want both those guys playing this week, or at least one of them. I actually prefer Saffold to play guard, move Mitchell back to the outside, and have Brown as my backup. That's what I would like. I mean, but now you're going up with Mitchell against Crosby. He's going to get beaten like a rented mule, eaten alive. And the Jets won't be smart enough to put a tight end there to chip all day, which is the only thing you have to do. You have no choice. Uzoma can't catch. Let him block. G?
Yep.
4-4 going to Las Vegas now to play the Raiders. You're going to need to get this one. If you're the Jets now, you know, you had one of these to play with. You had one of these to play with. This was
it.
You passed that point because a win here and Vegas gets the 5-5 and now another loss to another tiebreaker team. And you're just putting yourselves in a hole. It's a hole you probably can't come out of at that point, but we'll see how the season goes. Any closing comments on the Jets, guys?
Listen, 10 wins to get into the playoffs. They need 10 wins to get into the playoffs. Yep. You know, this has to be one of them. You can't count on sweeping Miami. You can't count on sweeping Buffalo. You have to win. You have to win one of these. You have to win. You can't count on winning in Cleveland. You know, those are four tough games right there.
Yeah.
So you have to find a way to win this.
Okay. All right. The other New York team, Giants lose to the Raiders 30-6. Raiders to 4-5. Giants to 2-7. This is a huge rout by the Raiders. Antonio Pierce wins in his coaching debut. It was 24-0 at the half. Josh Jacobs ran all over the place. On defense, Max Crosby had 3 of the 8 sacks for the game. It seemed like Vegas was pressuring the bad New York Giants offensive line all game. For the Giants, they lost Daniel Jones to a season-ending torn ACL one play into the second quarter. Barkley ran the ball 16 times for 90 yards. Tommy DeVito came on. 175 yards, 1 touchdown, 2 interceptions. And Tommy DeVito coming up this week will be the 10th rookie to start an NFL game this year, which will be a record for the NFL. Giants go to Dallas now. And Dallas was installed as a 17-point favorite at this point. Not looking good. They're 2-7. Guys, any comments? Darren?
They were embarrassed. I mean, it was 7-0 when Jones got knocked out. So, to be perfectly fair, it wasn't like they didn't quit until they lost Jones. And you feel bad because this might be the last start Daniel Jones has as a Giant. This is a year-long injury. If the Giants make a move for a different quarterback next year, which you figure they're going to and not going to Tyrod. Or Tyrod, as they say. You know, you figure that the Jones era might end. He seemed like he was hurt, but he went back out. Then he really got hurt. I don't know. I mean, DeVito showed he could throw. You know, the Giants wouldn't let him play against the Jets that way.
He had 176. One of the 2 interceptions
were right through Slayton's hands. I mean, you know, I can't even blame him on both picks. One was on DeVito. One was on Slayton. Slayton just missed it. Kev, sorry, what was
it? I was going to say, DeVito had 176 more yards passing than the game before.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I've never seen a coach that gets more credit for being good that gets blown out more than Brian Daboll.
You mean they get blown out
when they lose big. They don't lose a lot of tight games. They get their butts whipped when they lose.
You mean Mr. Mangini too?
Oh, I swear to God, I've never seen a guy that gets treated like, well, he's got the it factor and he's the alpha. Alpha what? Team gets blown out. I mean, I know they lost their quarterback. But they had 8 sacks against and 2 interceptions against. They recorded 0 sacks and 0 turnovers. You're not going to win that game, just like the Jets. I just think that the Giants, I really thought that this team was going to be decent this year, and they've really disappointed me. Kev?
Yeah, I had them as a playoff team. And I think you did too.
So did I.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that helped Vegas was Antonio Pierce, obviously. I mean, you can see him on the sideline. He looks like a coach. There's something about Pierce that just looks like a coach. But what got me was the story from the week before leading into the Detroit game, right? Which was McDaniel's last game. The story came out about the locker room and they had this big team meeting. Basically the players aired their grievances about McDaniel and Pierce stands up to talk about, all right, basically you've got everything off your chest. We need identity. We need to do this. We need to do that. You know, trying to stick up for McDaniel and talks about his experiences from 2007. We're the Giants. We had the belief that we were going to win every week. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. What was McDaniel's big thing after the game, after the speech? Don't you ever talk about the Patriots like that ever again.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's what Josh Daniels is going to worry about. Josh Daniels has no business being a high school coach, even.
McDumbass.
I mean, that's just ridiculous.
He's been a horrible, except for the 6 games he cheated. He's been awful as a head coach. Has never lasted a year and a half.
Yeah.
They caught him cheating. They won what, 2 games the rest of the way after that 5-0 start where they thought he was like, he's the Belichick tree of crap.
Yeah.
That's the worst tree going. That's why Belichick, I don't believe in Dable. Honestly, that's the reason I don't believe in Dable. That's why it was hard to believe in C.J. Stroud and all the other Ohio State quarterbacks. There's certain trees that you follow that you think they can't do it, even though we all like Stroud. It's just one of those things.
We do.
Yeah, well, we kind of liked him going into the year. Wait, we both thought he was going to be the best guy. We really did.
We both thought he should be number one. But that's
we thought he was the player of the draft, so it was a little different. I just, Dable can't keep this team together when things get a little adversity, and he acts like a baby on the sideline. He's got to do a little bit of a better job. I know we won a playoff game against a bad Minnesota defense last year, but my God, the pass this guy gets is amazing to me. Jake?
All right, let's go around the NFL, guys. Philadelphia with a 28-23 win against Dallas. They moved to 8-1, Dallas at 5-3. Dallas had more total yards than Philly. It still wasn't enough. They couldn't get in the end zone in the last couple of minutes. It's a bad situation. Their final drive, they needed 86 yards to score. 56 they got on Eagle penalties. Prescott got sacked in the last minute. Jalen Hurts throws for 2 touchdowns. He runs for 1. A.J. Brown, Kev, he's a beast. We know he's a beast. 66 yes, and another touchdown. Darren.
So the Cowboys had so many close calls, so many close misses. The 2-point conversion, he steps out of bounds by a foot. They call him good, right? 4th and goal, they get stopped at the 6-inch line, okay?
But
it just
Luke Schoonmaker?
I get it, right? I get it. So down the final drive, you just point out, gee, they get down to the 6, and then they fall apart. Start off with a false start, go back to the 11. Then they do a they get a sack, go back to the 20, then they get a delay of game, then he gets tackled at the 4. It was like they got to the 6, and part of that was an Eagle penalty, got him from the 11 to the 6, but they gave it right back. Then yeah. Dak, who, again, when you talk about the quarterbacks that have this presence, Dak is another one of those guys that really doesn't seem to have it. Like, and I'm not trying to compare everyone to Mahomes, but Burrow too. There's certain quarterbacks, when they're in that pocket, they do subtle slides and no one to take off and no one to step up and go back. They get sacked a few times. I'm not saying they don't. But you feel like they know when to slide. They feel it. Dak, for a guy that's been in the league as long as he has, doesn't have that. And he's got good athletic ability. So it's a stunning thing to me that he can't do it. But they were down there.
And he had a great game. He threw for 375 yards, 3 touchdowns.
Well, that's another one that, you know, you're down there. How close to the end zone? No timeouts left. Under 30 seconds. You
can't take the sack.
You've been in the league 7-8 years. That's a rookie mistake.
Yeah.
Throw that out the back of the end zone.
But once he takes that step up and doesn't release it, he's getting sacked. This is the Philadelphia pass rush. This isn't like you're playing against the Cardinals. You're playing against the Eagles. Unbelievable.
And then I thought it was
Dallas should have won.
And we've been
after the sack though is that they get everybody lined up, then they run another play rather than spiking it, and it winds up going out of the end zone anyway. He overthrew that one, and then the delay of game followed. It's like, what the hell are you doing?
They ruined the last minute of that game so badly. They got down the field with ease, and then with a ton of options with play call, and then all of a sudden you're down to none.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know what? In 1981, you know, the Dolphins before the half did a hook and ladder. And I don't know why nobody runs this type of play at the end of a half or the end of a game. You just feel like there's a chance if a guy catches the ball at the 4, he can flip it to somebody while everybody's converging. He might have a shot. Maybe it's just me. Nobody seems to think of it. I love that. I mean, I hate the Dolphins, but that was a great play. Tony Nathan went the distance. Anyway, sorry, G.
All right, Cincinnati beats Buffalo 24-18. They move to 5-3. Buffalo 5-4. Burrow 348-2. Cincinnati forced 2 turnovers. Josh Allen ran for a touchdown, threw for a touchdown, threw for an interception. Something still looks off with Buffalo, but Cincinnati looked really good in this game. Darren?
thought it was a long stretch where they didn't go to Diggs, and they can't do that. And Burrow's back. That's all I got to say. He's the guy that me and Kev both thought were going to the Super Bowl. So he's back, and he's sitting there. So that's what I see when I watch that team right now.
What surprises me was that game. They started off touchdown Bengals, touchdown Bills, touchdown Bengals. And you thought this is going to be a shootout. And all of a sudden, the defense took over after the first quarter.
Yeah.
The Buffalo defense really stepped up actually better than I thought. I knew Cincinnati could. I didn't know if Buffalo could, and they did.
But the Bills gave up the run totally. They only had 8 rushes by the running backs.
Just
it was just, all right, Josh, you got to do it.
Dorsey is not doing a good job calling plays.
I agree.
The table left. Dorsey has not been the same.
Yeah. Pittsburgh moves to 5-3 with a 2016 win over Tennessee. Tennessee's at 3-5. Pickett to Deontay Johnson with 4 minutes left is the winning touchdown. Pittsburgh again trailed in the fourth quarter for the fourth time this season and still got a win. That's right. 4 of their 5 wins, they have trailed into the fourth quarter and still gotten a win. Darren?
The biggest part of this game was the Pickens little tirade after the game saying, free me, because he's not getting the ball. He actually had a touchdown. He couldn't get his foot in bounds. I don't know what he's crying about. And Tomlin had the comment like, I don't have time to worry about his whatever. Tomlin just dismissed him as an idiot. Basically asking out of Pittsburgh, you know, listen, you're on a winning team and you got to act like that. Johnson catches the touchdown. The team goes to gather around them. Pickens walks off the field. He pouts because he didn't catch the touchdown. That's bad teammate right there. That's Antonio Brown all over again.
It's Johnson's first touchdown since 2021. And this guy who catches plenty of passes. He just hasn't found the end zone. And Pickens, celebrate being a good teammate there. Jeez. He's the other interesting stat, though, is that Pittsburgh's been outgained every game this year, and they're somehow 5-3.
Kansas
they haven't played the Jets yet. Anyway.
Kansas City moves to 7-2 with a 21-14 victory over Miami in Germany. Mahomes outplays Tua. Kansas City scored on a 59-yard fumble recovery. Miami, again, they look like a very good team, but not a great team. They need one of those signature wins to really start making everybody believe that they're the top team in that division. They need one of them. Darren?
First they need to beat somebody with a winning record.
Yeah.
That's the first thing.
Very true. I mean, listen, this game shouldn't have even been that close. The Chiefs had to stop, and then Chris Jones, after the play, stupidly shoves a Miami player, and they get a first down after they had to stop. This game should have been 21-10. Miami kind of moved the ball a little bit, but the Chief defense, I've been saying it since the preseason. I'm not trying to brag, but this is the best defense Mahomes has had. It might be one of the best defenses in the league. I mean, just because of the speed on this defense, and they're doing it without their best defensive player, arguably, in Bolton. He's been out for 2 games, but Tranquil's been really good filling in. They have a nice linebacking core. The secondary's grown. They were all rookies last year. Now they're all in their second year, and you can see the improvement on it. And you never thought you'd say win it with defense. And Mahomes, there's something it's very Jeter-esque about him. But you sit there and, you know, with boring as hell. But he's like, but those guys are the best in the league. And I'm not doing a good enough job winning these games for them. And I have some things I have to work on. And meanwhile, you watch him, and he's doing it by himself. He's got no receivers. And he still finds a way. But he expects more from himself, and I appreciate that.
All right. Cleveland with a 27-0 victory over Arizona moves to 5-3. The Browns demolish the Cardinals. They hold Arizona only 58 yards of offense. Deshaun Watson back from shoulder injury, threw for 219-2. Amari Cooper had 139 yards and a touchdown. Arizona rookie QB Clayton Tune, he was sacked 7 times. He threw the ball 11 times for a total of 58 yards. Kyler Murray coming back next week. Anything, guys?
Well, they lost 41 yards on sacks. Otherwise, they would have been close to 100. That was my only stat. That's why Kyler Murray's playing, because the other guys on this team, they played hard all year. This is probably the only bad game they've played, and they need to let these guys know that they care about them.
If this was college, Arizona would have had 0 yards rushing.
Yeah,
it was minus 41 on the sacks. They had 41 yards legitimately on the ground.
Yep,
and Collins would have been even 0 yards rushing.
Exactly, and it's 50-50. It's just awful job.
Yep.
New Orleans beats Chicago 24-17. New Orleans goes to 5-4. Derek Carr, 2-11-2. The Saints force 5 turnovers. Taysom Hill still all over the damn place. Drew for a touchdown. Rush for a touchdown. Caught a touchdown. We don't know what the hell he's doing, the guy. Tyson Bagent was not great. 220-2 with 3 interceptions. Looks like Justin Fields still has another week before we see him back in the fold.
Especially on the short week this week, Fields is not coming back. They're going to hope after the mini bye here that they'll be back this week, the following week. Bajan, you know, he's a Division II Av Shepherd, and he's doing it.
Yeah.
For that background, he's doing okay. He's proven himself that he could be a backup in this league.
Yeah.
He got a very nice long career as a backup. We know that. Taysom Hill, first guy since Frank Gifford with 10 or more career touchdowns, passing, receiving, and rushing.
If you are the Jets, would you rather have Bajan or would you rather have Wilson? Would you rather have Bajan or would you rather have Semien? Would you rather have Bajan or would you rather have Boyle? Maybe you stick with Wilson, but I think you stick with Zach.
Yeah, I was just gonna. Yeah, I agree with you, Darren.
It's like, you know, and to bring him in would not be an awful thing. That's all I'm saying.
All right, Green Bay gets a victory against the Rams. They move to 3-5. The Rams are 3-6. Brett Rippon at quarterback just wasn't enough for the Rams. Carson Wentz brought in as a backup for Stafford. Aaron Jones, by the way, 20-73 with a touchdown in the win.
Rippon already released.
Yep. Minnesota, 31-28 victory over Atlanta. They moved to 5-4. This was a good game. Dobbs had to come in 5 days after being traded from Arizona after a Jaren Hall injury. Threw for 20 completions for 158 yards and 2 touchdowns. He ran 7 times to 66 yards and a touchdown. Atlanta used Heinicke at quarterback. They're still not giving enough touches to Bijan. It's ridiculous. They ran the ball. He ran the ball 11 times out of the 28 times they ran the ball. Arthur Smith continues to use Algier. He continues to use Jonnu Smith. It's just inexplainable. Kev?
Yeah. Bijan 11 carries, Algier 12. No explanation for that. No reason for that. Great job coaching, apparently, by Kevin O'Connell there.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, Dobbs is signed 5 days prior. He had never taken a snap.
Nope.
You know, all the practice time went to Jaren Hall. So he just had Dobbs run no huddle and communicate through the headset with him for the entire time up until 15 seconds on the play clock. And just talked him through.
I heard after the game, Josh Dobbs didn't even know some of the receivers' names.
Yeah.
To me, this game was really interesting. Dobbs comes in. He gets sacked for a safety. Next series, he gets he fumbles. Then he leaves it for a touchdown. Then he's sacked and he fumbles again. It was like, oh my God, he's all over the place. Then all of a sudden, the second half, as he's just improvising, they go back and forth. Atlanta storms back, takes a lead, late. And then Dobbs with under two to play leads the Vikings at 11 plays, 75 yards. It was really impressive. Arthur Smith should be shot. You have talent on that team, and you don't have Drake London playing, and you still don't get the ball enough to Pitts, and you still don't give the ball to Bijan. Come on, Kev.
The real problem for those of us who don't have streaming or don't subscribe to any of the streaming stuff, in the New York market, we were stuck with Washington and New England. Well, this game, which on paper was a better game to begin with. I would much prefer to have seen this game, and it turned out to be a better game. But now we got stuck with Commanders and Patriots.
And we'll go to that game next. Washington with the 20-7 victory over New England. They moved to 4-5. Howell, 325 with a touchdown and an interception. Jartavius Martin with the late interception versus Mac Jones helps to get the win. And Washington now has 4 victories. Darren.
So the Commanders trade everybody away, and then they win. You just can't really make it up. They trade away their 2 defensive ends. They still get pressure on Matt's offensive line. They played hard. The one thing you'll say, Riverboat Ron is going to be out. at the end of the year, barring right now, that team is right there in the seventh spot or tied for the seventh spot for the playoffs. As bad as Washington has been or as inconsistent as they've been. Yeah. I mean, you know, Howell does things you like. He does things you don't. He's young. The running backs are good. I don't think they run the ball enough for this for the amount of
that
Robinson, you know, has. They finally threw the ball to Dotson for the first time in a big spot. I'm really tired of seeing Curtis Samuel. You know what he is. Let's see what Dotson is. And McLaurin.
Got Dotson and McLaurin. I mean,
yeah. He should be getting 12 targets a game in that team. It's crazy.
Baltimore moves to 7-2 with a 37-3 victory over Seattle. This was just a rout from start to finish. Baltimore held Seattle to 6 first downs. Total yardage in the game, Baltimore 515, Seattle 151. Keaton Mitchell had 138 yards and a touchdown. Gus Edwards, 5 carries, 52 yards, and 2 touchdowns to lead the way. Baltimore just kicking it up a gear right now. They're looking like one of the top teams in that conference.
And John, too, couldn't switch over to the better game going at the same time a lot earlier.
I mean, to me, they rushed for 298 yards. In the NFL, they rushed for 298. I don't know if the Jets have had 298 yards in a game this year offensively. I'm not sure. They probably have, but I'm not sure. They rushed for 298. Maybe. This was a game where Seattle, I thought, was going to keep this game close. They embarrassed themselves. Geno Smith, up and down, and down.
Indianapolis, 27-13 victory over Carolina. They moved to 4-5, Carolina 1-7. Kenny Moore had 2 pick sixes to help snap the 3-game skid. Bryce Young really is not looking so hot at the moment. Jonathan Taylor did get a lot of work in the game, 18 for 47 on the ground, 5 for 22 and a touchdown receiving. And the last game on the board, Houston with a 39-37 victory over Tampa. They moved to 4-4. Tampa Bay at 3-5. This was actually a pretty good game. This was back and forth the whole time. CJ Stroud, 30 for 42 for 470 yards, 5 touchdowns. The last touchdown to win the game, he hit Tank Dell with 6 seconds left. Noah Brown, Dalton Schultz, Tank Dell all had at least 114 yards and a touchdown. Dell had 2, by the way. Nico Collins also had a touchdown. Baker Mayfield didn't even play bad. He threw for 265 and 2. Rashad White scored twice on the ground. But Houston in the back and forth game. And by the way, CJ Stroud in the last 5 minutes led 2 like game winning drives. It was pretty crazy. Darren?
They lost their kicker.
Oh, yeah.
They flat lost their kicker. They had to go for 2. And then they brought the, what was it, a running back in there, yep. I think, to kick it. And he kicked an extra point, I think. They were going for 2 left and right. It was the whole spread, by the way, at the end of the game was because they went for 2 and didn't get it. That was the spread at the end of the game. Why can't punters practice kicking? I don't understand this. Why can't your punter take 10 kicks a freaking week? What else is he doing? How exhausted can he be? He's freaking punting. Let the guy practice kicking. I don't get the whole thing. It drives me nuts. To me, it's just asinine. The guy knows how to kick. Teach him how to kick a field goal, Kev.
I practiced his name, Ogunbowale.
Yeah, that's right. I wasn't going to go there. But he
I practiced. He actually kicked. He kicked the 29-yard field goal in the fourth quarter to give him the 3-point lead. That was the amazing part. I mean, you'll remember the extra points were longer than 29. Yeah, 30 was his limit, I think.
But he got he nailed that by a good 10 yards. He could have went he went really good from 40. Yeah. And the funny thing about it is that, again, I don't understand how punters don't get a little work at kicking and kickers don't get a little work at punting. How do you not have a backup for the position?
A gumbo water is this?
Backup. No, but you need a backup that only does his kick.
I agree.
Oh, the stupidity.
By the way,
great game.
CJ Stroud really looks like the real deal, guys. I mean, we were on this last year. We thought he was the best quarterback of the group. Really looks like the real deal. And by the way, he cost me a win in fantasy because I played against him. The guy put up 56 fantasy points against me, and I lost by 12.
Oh, God.
looking ahead for this week, week 10 coming up, by the way. I mean, the season flies. Bengals home against the Texans, Ravens home against the Browns, Jaguars at home facing the 49ers, Jets, we know, going to the Raiders. Any other big games you guys want to touch on? We got a Germany game again, by the way.
The Lions-Chargers, I think, is a good one as well.
That is a good one.
It's the terrible games on national TV this weekend. Starting tomorrow night, the Thursday night game, Panthers-Bears. The Sunday morning in Germany, Colts-Patriots. 1 o'clock, New York, we're going to get stuck with Green Bay-Pittsburgh on Channel 2 instead of Houston-Cincy, which is a far better game. At least we get San Fran-Jacksonville on Channel 5. The late game, we get Giants-Cowboys. Oh, boy, there's a thrill. The Sunday night game, Jets-Raiders. Most of the country doesn't care about that. And the Monday night game is Broncos-Bills. Just terrible games all weekend.
The other game that could be good, though, is Vikings-Saints because both teams are fighting for a playoff spot. I mean, again, there's no – I mean, the Jaguars-San Francisco game is great.
That's a great game.
That's the game.
Yeah.
To me, that's the game of the week. Real fun. And Houston-Cincy – is Houston ready to play Cincy? That's going to be the question, Matt.
I also like Ravens-Browns. I mean,
I do too, Gino. I do. Yeah.
Cleveland defense is really good. You know, Cleveland defense against the Baltimore defense, you know.
And watching the Lions-Chargers, that's going to be a Lion home game in L.A.
Lamar against Deshaun also in that game. QB action. All right. Week 10 is on its way here. Darren, we're going to come back to NFL picks at the end. Let's go to some college football, Darren. We had some good stuff going on last week.
Yeah, we're
going
to do a quick recap, all right? And I don't have to insult any South Carolina things this week, so it makes it nice and easy, Kev. Tennessee.
And they won.
I know, but they struggled so badly against
them. Oh, I know.
Kev, I didn't want to mention it. Tennessee, Utah, Louisville, Penn State, Oregon, where Nick's threw for 386 and 4 touchdowns, and Michigan, as McCarthy threw for 335. They all rolled, all right? The interesting thing about Michigan-Purdue was that the coaches barely shook hands. The Purdue coach criticized Harbaugh for the sign-stealing thing, and the two of them barely acknowledged each other at the end of the game. UCLA and Air Force both lost and basically fall out, okay? So that pretty much ends it. And the Air Force-Army game, and Kev, you can talk about it. Army dominated this game. Air Force just kept turning the ball over every time they touched it, Kev?
Yeah, 6 turnovers by Air Force. They come in with 5 all year. Yeah. Army's first win over a ranked team in 50 years. First time they led by 20 or more against a ranked team since 1958. University of South Carolina, believe it or not.
Wow.
It was 23-3 at halftime, and then they just played out. They played out the strain. The yards was even 250 yards for both teams. But the 6 turnovers were just shocking.
They just kept turning it over.
Unbelievable. And this gives Army a chance. Army-Navy game. Army wins. They win the Commander-in-Chief trophy. That game means something for Army.
Yeah, so they embarrass themselves against UMass at the game I'm at the week before. They come out and beat a ranked team. Clemson rises from the ashes at home and beats Notre Dame. And then they kind of were in the lead the whole way. Hartman was awful. He's never beaten Clemson. It showed. He just looked awful. I think he sees that uniform, he falls apart.
13 for 30.
Yeah, he was awful. Ohio State pulled away late from Rutgers, who's, by the way, Rutgers bowl eligible, first time since 2014. Rutgers led 9-7 in this game. Ohio State kind of stormed back in the second half.
The pick six changed that.
What was that, Kev?
That pick six right after the half.
Just pretty much turned it around. Ole Miss and A&M was a hell of a game, by the way. Good push for my friend Kev, unless you covered it. I'm not sure. Dart threw for 387 and 2, and Judkins rushed for 102 in the game-winning touchdown. He had 3 on the day. Kansas State. What?
I was going to say, A&M had a 47-yard field goal attempt to try it that was partially blocked.
Yep.
Ole Miss the win.
So I had Kansas State on the money line. God damn it. They stormed back from down 27-7, forced OT at the gun, and they get stopped in overtime. They missed a 27-yard field goal. They blew an extra point. Kansas State did everything in their power to lose this game. It was driving me crazy. Brooks and Baxter for Texas, by the way. They combined for 202 yards rushing, 2 touchdowns in the win. Howard threw for 327 and 4 touchdowns in the loss. I thought they were a live dog. Gino thought he had it won and wrapped up at 27-7. I had him with Oklahoma State on a money line parlay. I was so upset. Tulane wins a lot of close games, and they won another one over a pretty mediocre East Carolina team, 13-10. They were down 10-0, scored the last 13. Florida State pulled away late from Pitt, 24-7. Travis puts up huge numbers, 2 for 360 and a touchdown. Kansas wins again. They win over Iowa State, 28-21. They led 21-3 at the half and held on. Washington breaks a late tie against USC. Johnson rushes for 256 and 4. Caleb throws for 312 and 3. USC simply has no defense. Kev?
And they went over the 75 and a half.
Oh, God.
They almost hit that by halftime.
Listen, the offenses were flowing. Penix didn't even have a huge day. They were just running the ball down their throat. App State, rare easy one, 31-9. Just figure I'll touch it off here in the middle. No reason to go crazy. Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, perhaps the last Bedlam game ever. That's how sad this is for me. This eats me alive, Gino. Eats me alive that Bedlam might be over. Bowman threw for 334 and Gordon rushed for 137 and 2. They led 17-7. Oklahoma stormed back, took the lead. Oklahoma State came back and won it at the end. Oregon State held off a late charge from Colorado. They won 26-19. And Alabama, they scored the final 21 points to get past LSU 42-28. Milroe threw for 219 and rushed for 155 and four touchdowns in the win. Daniels got hurt, and LSU couldn't keep up. But Daniels still threw for 219 and two touchdowns and rushed for 163 and a touchdown. He also threw a pick. But, oh, man, that game was really going back and forth, and then all of a sudden Alabama just kind of seized control of it. LSU is probably the best three-loss team I've seen in a long time. They're really good, and they're fun to watch. That kid Daniels, hope he's all right. So that's my recap of last week's games. Any comments before I go into this week?
Oh, the only other game, the under.
I hit it. Iowa 10. I had a nice with Alabama, by the way.
After the scoreless half, 10-7 Iowa. The total yards, 169 for Iowa, 170 for Northwestern.
A lot of that was on that last touchdown drive.
What was the over-under again?
30.5. Started off at 29.5, went up. But I had it, and I won it, and I felt really good at 0-0 at the break.
And this week, Iowa again, they're playing Rutgers.
Yep.
28.5 to open.
It's getting on point each time. Rutgers, and I'm going to tell you again, bet the under. I'm 2 for 2 on this. I'm going 3 for 3, I think. So this is we're going to do it a little differently this week. We're just going by the playoff rankings, and we're going to just talk about the teams that have a chance. I'm not going through all the top 25. So we're going to start with the number one ranked team in the country is Ohio State. They play Michigan State at home. They're favored by 31. They also have Minnesota, and they end the season at Michigan. So that's what they have left. Right now they're undefeated. Any place you think this team could slip up, do you think Michigan will decide at the end of the year? But they should roll through the next two, I think.
Yeah.
I would think so.
Number two, Georgia visits number nine, Ole Miss in Athens. This is a really big matchup. We'll get a little deeper into this as we go. They also Georgia goes to Tennessee and then Georgia Tech to end the season. So both on the road, just something to think about. Michigan's the three. They're playing the 10 Penn State. Another one we're going to get a little deeper in, Kev.
What would be most interesting scenario would be Michigan losing to Penn State this week and then Michigan beating Ohio State. Does all three of them tie it with one loss? That would be really interesting. Yeah.
It really would be. I kind of hope it happens. Michigan ends at Maryland and then Ohio State at home. The four is Florida State. They play Miami this week. Then they get that bullcrap game in the middle, North Alabama, and they end at Florida. So
they're two in-state rivalry games, at least.
I know. You at never Florida know. At the end is not an easy game.
Yeah.
Number five, Washington hosts Utah. And then they go to Oregon State next week, and they host Wazoo in the Apple Cup. So their schedule is not easy as they go down the stretch. Six is Oregon. They host USC, which is never easy, despite the fact that USC has no defense. They can still outscore you. Then they go to Arizona State, and they end with Oregon State in maybe the final Civil War. So that's an interesting one. The seven is Texas. They play TCU this week on the road. Then they end at Iowa State and host Texas Tech at the end. So again, Iowa State's no pushover on the road. Eight is Alabama. They head to Kroger this week to play Kentucky. And then they host Chattanooga in that bullcrap SEC late season game. And they end the season in the Iron Bowl at Auburn. Number nine, Ole Miss. We touched on them. They're going to play at Georgia this week. And then they play Louisiana Monroe. And they end at Mississippi State in the Egg Bowl. 10, we touched on Penn State. They have their game this week against Michigan, and then they have Rutgers and then at Michigan State. And the last team really to touch on is Louisville. They only have one loss also. They lost to Pitt. They host Virginia and this week, and then they end at Miami and home for Kentucky. So there are pitfalls here. There are rivalries at the end of the season for all these teams. Anything can happen. But, you know, this week there's two that stand out, guys. So why don't we start with – and App State plays Georgia State, and Georgia State's favored by two. This should be a very interesting game. It's a road game. They're not playing in Boone. They're going to Atlanta. But I think this is a pretty exciting game as well. And like I had on here at the point, by the way, I hit the under on the Ohio Northwestern and missed that K-State Oklahoma State money line two team, but I hit Oklahoma State straight up. Anyway, so let's start with let's start at Happy Valley. We have Michigan, the undefeated Wolverines, visiting the one-loss Penn State Nittany Lions, the land of Joe Pa. Not that they talk about him much anymore. This has been a one-sided rivalry for the most part, as Penn State has struggled against top 10 teams, but they get this one at home. Who do you like, G? Spread's 4.5. Last I saw, you might have a different spread. I have Michigan favored by 4.5 on the road.
4.5.
All right. Where you going, brother?
I'm taking Michigan. I think the only thing that could upset the apple cart right now with Michigan is anything going on with this cheating scandal with Mr. Harbaugh. So, but I like Michigan in this game. I think they come out. I think they'll beat Penn State here at Penn State, and they move ahead. And listen, that'll definitely set up next week. That's for sure. 2 weeks from now when they play. 2 weeks from now? No, next week when they play Ohio State.
No, 2 weeks. 2 weeks. 2 weeks.
It is 2 weeks. 2 weeks. Yeah. So I'm taking Michigan minus 4.5.
Kevy, where are you going on this one?
Yeah, the only thing that would get me would be if there's any sort of penalties, if Harbaugh gets suspended or anything like that. But Michigan right now, I think, is circling the wagons. They are taking an us against them approach, I think, right now. I think they're going to come out and beat Penn State.
I think they're going to beat Penn State, but they're not going to cover. I think Penn State keeps this to a field goal game. I'm taking Penn State plus the points in this game. Might actually win it. Again, Franklin has done a crap job against the best teams in this conference. He's beaten up all the teams he's supposed to beat up. I don't love their offense and their passing game, but I think they might have enough to keep this game close. I'm taking Penn State plus 4.5. The other big feature game, I'm sorry, G, what's up?
So just one thing to note. Last week, Darren, you were 3-0. Kev was 2-0-1. I was 1-2. Darren, you are a blazing 21-7-2 on the year. Just a heads up. We on the whole are 53-29-8. So we're on fire.
We're all doing well.
So go ahead. Yeah. Sorry. Let's go back. So the second big game.
Georgia, Ole Miss, and Athens. Between the hedges, G. This is one of those games where Ole Miss only has the one loss on the season, okay? They lost at Alabama in a 24-10 game. They led early. Alabama kind of slowly just wore them down. Georgia has had their ups and downs this year. They haven't been the most impressive Georgia team we've seen over the last few years. Spread's 10.5 last I saw on Georgia's favor. Who do you like, G?
I like Georgia. I don't think Ole Miss has enough to beat this team. I know they only have one loss. I know they moved up one notch in the rankings from last week, from 10 to 9. I just don't think they have enough to beat Georgia.
Kevy?
I think we're going opposite each other again. I think last week I liked Missouri over Georgia. You like Georgia. I'm going with Ole Miss getting the 10.5. Like you said, Darren, Georgia hasn't been as dominant as they've been the last 2 years. I mean, that's how high the bar has been set. Even if it's a backdoor cover, I think Ole Miss keeps it within 10.
I'm going to go with Georgia between the hedges at home to kind of rally the troops. I think they're going to lose next week to Tennessee. Sleeper alert on my part. But I do think that – I think they're going to lose outright. But I think that they're going to find a way to win this game by two touchdowns. I think it'll be close for a while. I think Georgia will pull away a little bit late. I think Georgia's a good bully team. When they have you beat, they kind of lay it on you a little bit. So that's my take. So, G – two more picks. Where are you going with it, brother?
My first one, I'm taking Missouri plus the 1.5 against Tennessee. They played Georgia close last week. They lost 30-21, but played them close. I think they rebound at home here. I'm taking Missouri plus the 1.5. And my fourth pick, I'm taking Alabama. They had a good win last week against LSU. The only loss goes back to September 9th against Texas. I'd like Alabama minus the 10.5 against Kentucky. Kev?
My other two games, I'm going to take Kansas laying 3.5 at home against Texas Tech. I'm surprised it's only 3.5. I thought it'd be closer to the touchdown. And my third game, I'm going to take Oklahoma State on the road. I think they're giving 3 at UCF. Actually, I see a 2.5. I'll let Gino give me the – is it 2.5?
2.5.
All right. All right. I got the
little hook there. That way.
The little hook there. So those are my other two games, Kansas and Oklahoma State.
I'm going to Champaign. Big win last week for Illinois. Come back in the last minute to beat Minnesota, stay alive in the putrid Big Ten West. I think they beat Indiana by more than 6.5 at home. I think they find a way to win that game. I'm taking Illinois minus 6.5 against Indiana. And my last one, I'm going to go with Houston minus 2.5 against Cincy. They're home. They're playing pretty well overall. They gave Texas fits a couple weeks ago. They won on the Hail Mary against West Virginia. I think that they're a little bit better than Cincinnati. I think Houston finds a way. So I have, obviously Penn State. I have Illinois. I have Georgia. And I have Houston. And those are my picks. G, back to you, bud.
Little bonus bet. I actually really like Texas at TCU minus the 10, by the way. Okay. I didn't take them, but I do like them a lot this week. I think Texas is going to roll this week. All right, college picks in the books. We're going to go around. We got a couple of little things going on. Where do we want to start? We want to start NBA, NHL?
Whichever one you want.
Kev, why don't you start us with a little NBA stuff?
NBA. So far, much to everybody's surprise, Denver has the best record in the league at 7-1. Dallas, second best.
Denver did lose Jamal Murray, though, today.
Yeah, he's out for 3 or 4 weeks with a hamstring.
He's been out for a while, though. He hasn't been playing.
They're deep enough. But you look, Denver, I mean, Jokic, 8 games in, he's got 3 triple-doubles already, averaging 28.5, 13 rebounds, 8.5 assists.
Unreal.
Just unreal. Dallas, they've got it working with Doncic and Kyrie. They're 6-1 off to the start. Doncic is averaging 31.5, 9.5 rebounds, 9 assists. And Kyrie's chipping in 20 points and almost 8 assists. So the two of them are working off each other well. So that's what Doncic was missing, was that second star player with him. So they've got a nice, size differential there. And then Boston and Philly, I think they were playing tonight. They were both 5-1 going into the game.
Philly won 106-103.
Okay. But again, the two superstars, Tatum for Boston is averaging over 30. Embiid's averaging 32.5 with 11 rebounds and 6 assists, which is a nice number for the big man. Locally, Knicks had a nice win tonight against the Spurs, even their record of 4-4. Brunson and Barrett are the two guys who are doing real well. They're both averaging 22 points a game. They need to get Randle going. Going into tonight, he was still shooting under 30% for the season. So the fact that they're 4-4 with him struggling, I think they're going to be okay. They did beat the Suns the other night. It was Harden's first game. They won pretty easily, 111-97.
That was Clippers.
Clippers, I mean, thank you. I even wrote down Suns. Jeez. And then tonight they play the Spurs, and they beat Wemby's team by about 20 as well. The Nets are off to a 3-4 start. They're getting big contributions from Cam Thomas, averaging almost 30 points a game, and Michael Bridges averaging 22. Simmons, you like the team score maybe a little bit more, only 6.5 points, but he does have 11 rebounds and 7 assists. So, he's filling up the stat sheet. He's played all but one game. You sit out the second half of the back-to-back games. That's my quick take on NBA. Guys, do you have anything?
Yeah, just for me, the Nets won tonight again. They play really hard.
So they get the 4-4.
They beat the Clips. They play really hard. Wembanyama looks like the real deal. He had like 38 against the Suns. I mean, he didn't have a good night tonight. It was 4-for-14 against the Knicks. But the kid's a unicorn. He's 7'5 with the wingspan of a condor. I mean, I don't know what you're supposed to do against a guy like that. I had a quick NBA story just because it's just an interesting thing. On this day in 1978, Gino, the Nets and the Sixers played a game. The last 17 minutes and 50 seconds of the game was replayed on March 23rd of 79 due to a protest being upheld. Harvey Catchings and Ralph Simpson played for the Sixers to start the game, and Eric Money and Al Skinner played for the Nets to start the game. They were traded for each other, and it's the only time in the history of professional sports that guys played on opposite teams in the same game. Wow. So they started the game as a Sixer, ended the game as a Net, and vice versa. Did not know that story. It was a little before we started watching basketball, but I thought that was pretty cool.
They had stats for both teams in the same game.
So they got traded for each other, and they ended up playing against each other, even though the game started. But because of I don't know what the protest, I couldn't get the info on that. It was upheld. They had to play the last 17 minutes wild. And 50 seconds.
Wow.
That's my quick NBA story.
All right, we'll go to quick NHL, a little update to start the year. Boston at 10-1-1, Vegas at 11-1-1, Rangers starting really hot at 9-2-1, and Vancouver 9-2-1. Those are the top four right now. Devils at 7-4-1, Islanders at 5-3-3. Season's just getting going. Darren, Kev, any tidbits here?
Kev, lead the way. I got a little story at the end, a little rant at the end, so go ahead.
Rangers are off to a great start. Panarin's been on fire. 7 goals, 13 assists. And Kreider's got 9 goals, 3 assists. Shesterkin quick. You know, quick. It's early yet. It's only a few games in, but Quick's actually out playing Shesterkin, if you can believe it. Boy, that's a hell of a backup goalie. That just takes a lot of pressure off Shesterkin. It helps keep him fresh for what they hope to be a deep playoff run this year. But combined, they've got 2.17 goals against average and a 921 save percentage. They're playing great. The Islanders, they're led by Noah Dobson. You know, every team wants their defenseman to be their leading scorer. And I brought up in our preview before the season, they need more from Barzal. He's got 2 goals and 8 points in 11 games. Just underwhelming, disappointing. I mean, Bo Horvat's playing pretty well for them so far. At the other end of the spectrum, Gino, you mentioned the top teams. San Jose finally won their first game Tuesday night. They beat the Flyers 2-1, avoided setting the record. They lost their first 11 games, 10 of them in regulation. But what was embarrassing last week on I think it was Thursday, Saturday. Thursday they played Vancouver, lose 10-1. They said, that's rock bottom. It can't get any worse. You're right. It wasn't worse. They lost the following game to Pittsburgh, 10-2. Never seen – you don't see NHL teams give up 10 goals. Never mind 10 back-to-back. I mean,
but you're criticizing a team that doubled up their scoring output, Kev. I don't understand what you're doing. They went from 1-2. Anything else on hockey? I just have a quick little rant here. Okay, so like we said, you know, Boston finally lost. Vegas finally lost. Every team's lost a regulation game now. Jack Hughes leads the league in points. Panarin's third. Auston Matthews leads the league in goals. All that stuff's pretty good. When you look at these teams, the Rangers, you know, they have a certain toughness. They have some good speed. They have a lot of guys that can put the puck in the net. They have an identity. You know, the Devils are the fastest team I've seen, I think. I think they're that quick. Hughes is just a great player. They transition as quick as any team I've seen. Great identity. The Islanders, even though you might feel that way, that front line of Horvat and Barzal, even though Barzal hasn't contributed yet, is kind of exciting. The fourth line hits everybody that comes at him. The defense is great, and the goaltending's world class. Identity. Now try rooting for the Calgary Flames, okay? I just want to say this for a second. There is nothing to root for on this team. My best goaltender is still in the WHL because they refuse to play Wolf with a 934 save percentage down there. I'm sorry, 946. I'm an idiot. And they got to play Markstrom, who's like Swiss cheese back there, and Vladar. There's no offensive plays you want to watch, and the defense is weak. There's nothing worse in watching a hockey team than when the team doesn't have an identity. I'm very thankful that all three local teams have an identity to themselves. The Islanders are not going to score a lot of goals, but they're going to be very physical. They're going to sit there and grind it. You know, they don't have a lot of room for error, but they have a world-class goalie. Rangers are going to have the world-class goalie as well. do all that stuff. The Devils are going to try to outscore you and just outrace you up and down. They lost to the Avalanche last night, but they're pretty good. The Calgary Flames have no identity, and it's devastating. Every good player that comes in there can't wait to leave. It's freaking brutal to watch a team that there's nothing exciting to watch. Let me put on Calgary to watch. I don't know. That's what it's like watching the damn Calgary Flames. Jake?
I wasn't sure where you go with that.
Well, there it is.
So the Islanders are much like the Jets. Good defense / goaltending. Can't score.
They score enough to go 5-3-3. It's not brutal. The Jets are 4-4. Same thing.
They're 5-6. They've got 5 wins, 6 losses.
5-3-3, my friend.
All right, we'll move to little baseball news. Not a lot going on right now except some managers got hired. Council goes to the Cubs. Vogt goes to the Indians. Ron Washington to the Angels. Carlos Mendoza to the Mets. And on a side note, we'll get into the Mets for a couple minutes, but on a side note, Steve Cohen today proposed an $8 billion casino complex at Citi Field, where he would bring the Hard Rock Hotel Casino, a massive live venue, 20 acres of park area, and a food hall. And if this goes through, this will be unbelievably crazy. That area will be a outright disaster to get around, by the way. Mets bring in Carlos Mendoza. Darren?
Just one thing. We also – no, I'm going to let Kev start on Mendoza. We had a World Series champion. That's how exciting it was during this week. Since our last show, the Rangers actually won the World Series. That was still going on when we were recording.
Yeah, when we were recording.
The Rangers did win.
Oh, the game ended after we were done? Okay.
The yes. Rangers did win the World Series. It ended up being ho-hum because they scored a bunch of runs late to make a 1-0 game into a 5-0 game. But, yes, congratulations, Bruce Bochy and the Texas Rangers.
Who
nobody thought in the beginning of the year should have any chance of winning the World Series over the Arizona Diamondbacks, who 2 years ago lost 100 games, and nobody thought had any chance of being in the World Series. Yeah. Anyway, so, Kev, tell us everything you know about Mendoza.
He was Aaron Boone's bench coach.
And there it is. That's the end.
How'd that bench do this year? Anyway.
Oh, I mean, he learned from the best in Aaron Boone. Come on.
Oh, God.
You know what? Craig Council, you know, fine, whatever. I actually think it was a pretty crappy move with the Cubs and Council, though, that it seems like they were negotiating and were hired before Ross was even fired.
It's not something that's commonly done by managers. Usually they respect each other a little more than that.
Yeah, so to me, that said, the fact that he went there before they fired Ross, before there was an opening that we knew about or that anybody knew about, just is a bad taste in my mouth for that.
I agree with you, pal.
Ron Washington, 71 years old, to the Angels. Way to go for the youth movement there. But back to the Mets. God, I hope this is none of the Mickey Callaway and Rojas a couple years ago. I mean, we've given first-time managers a couple of chances here. They haven't been successful. I hope this is more like Davey Johnson than the last couple of first-time managers.
The only difference is this is a first-time manager with absolutely no managerial experience.
He managed in the Yankees minor leagues back in like 2010, 2011. It's been a long time.
All right.
I'm sorry, I took out my abacus to look it up in my encyclopedias and I couldn't find it. You got it.
Okay.
But yeah, it's what to go from Buck Showalter to Carlos Mendoza just seems such a step down. Hopefully Stearns made the right call here. I mean, I'm a Met fan. I'm gonna be rooting for Mendoza. I'm not gonna badmouth him. I want to give him a chance. I want to see him do something, you know. Let's see what he's got.
At this point, you really can't do a little bit anyway.
The only thing that I'm afraid of is that he's just going to be a yes man to the front office, that they're going to dictate, here's the lineup, here's who you're playing, who's who you're pitching every day. You know, I think you still need to – use analytics as part of your decision making, but not as the overriding factor for everything. You know, when you're deciding on your lineup, you know, guy's red hot. He's facing the pitcher that maybe hasn't had success against, but the guy's red hot. You play him. You don't bench him. When a pitcher's going out there, you know, he's got five shutout innings. Oh, we're going to face him lineup for the third time. He's got to come out. Why? He's throwing five shutout innings. He's given up one hit. He struck out eight. Let him stay out there. Screw the analytics there. You know, you've still got to have that baseball sense. You've got to still have that the eyes on the game, the feel for the game to manage. Yeah. And I really, really hope Carlos Mendoza is not going to be the, oh, this is what the front office told me to do. I'm not my own man. You know, that's my biggest.
That is fear. The way these managers, that is the way the new wave of these managers are. So I wouldn't be surprised if that is the way this is going.
Just a quick point, and it's going to be a football into baseball. Mike McDaniels, who coaches the Dolphins, you know, I sit there and I root for him to lose so badly, not because it's just the Dolphins, but because I can't have another computer geek kid that can sit there and draw plays on his goddamn computer, try to take over a league and take away the feel and the heart of the sport. I feel like that's already happened with baseball. With guys like you know, Theo Epstein and Brian Cashman and all these other guys that try to overanalyze and take over the role of manager, and you know what? There's just something baseball. It's very funny. They were talking about Hal came out this week with we talk about bunting, whatever, you know, and talk about small ball. It's not small ball. It's baseball. Okay, enough. Everybody calling it small ball. It's baseball. A guy's on first. I go hit and run. He tries to go to third. You know, you can try to steal a base. You move a guy over. You make productive outs. You make contact. This is baseball. It's not small ball. I'm sorry. And the fact is that they're trying to change the game to be a fantasy game. And that's what they're trying to do in football. That's why I can't have guys like Mike McDaniel succeed. You can't have it just be Tecmo Bowl. It's got to be guys that have played the sport. It's got to be, you know, Pierce on the Raiders. It's got to be Salah. It's got to be guys that will run through a wall, and baseball guys should have courage. It shouldn't be run by a bunch of guys that couldn't hit in Little League that are now sitting there kind of controlling stats on a computer. Every time I watch the ESPN game on Monday night, it's all about analytics. The analytics say we should go for a fourth and three.
Oh, that's
use your freaking head. You know, analytics can't tell you how your team is moving right now. They can't tell you how the defense is playing. They can't do any of that stuff. And you know what? I'm sorry. If you're down a certain amount of points, you should know when to go for two and when not to. You shouldn't have to look at a chart for analytics. It's a damn joke. Play baseball. Play football. But right now we're talking about baseball. Mendoza, go out there. Set the lineup. You know, meet with the GM. Have the plan of what you want the team to do. But manage what you feel. Manage what you got. You've been in the sport long enough. You're not a kid. You got your first chance here. Freaking earn it. Do something with it. I hope to God the Mets are successful because it makes our show better, makes everything better. We want to talk about baseball. Baseball's so boring in the playoffs because we have nothing to talk about.
We want Mets and Yankees in the playoffs.
We do. Absolutely. Come on. Absolutely. I mean, we were fun.
We spent a month just bemoaning baseball because it was just like, oh, yeah, the baseball's on. Okay.
And not to be mean, because Mike McDaniels comes off like a pretty decent guy. He comes off a little funny, seems respectful, all that stuff. But I can't have some computer nerd running the NFL. What's going to happen next in that league? I mean, we can't let this stuff happen. You need men to run these sports, not the freaking crap that we're seeing now, not these freaking little mutants, these
geeks. Those damn nerds.
I need men. Men should run sport, not us. Men. Not
nerds.
Let's call us.
Men. Like a picture of ogre. Nerds.
It's so annoying. I sit there and I watch this and I watch the way baseball is run now and the GM is the manager and I just don't like it. And you know what? It's time to get back to where baseball players learn how to play baseball again, because that's what wins games. Jay?
I mean, does Bruce?
Okay, I'm sorry.
Bruce Bochy just won the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
Is he taking every piece of direction from the front office, or is he his own man?
I would hope he's his own man with this many years and this much success. I don't know. I mean, we're not part of it, but I would hope so.
I would hope so. Again, you take your input as part of your decision-making, but it can't be the final decision from the front office.
Man, it just blows my mind. The amount of of guys that look at a computer screen with a bunch of other nerds that are looking at him at the same time and telling you that this guy hits 2 points better against lefties than righties, so he should play tonight. It's just a joke. G?
All right, we're going to move off that. Darren, before we get to NFL, you had a horse racing pick.
Just want to go through the breeders. Kev, if you have any comments on these, let me know.
Nope.
The classic. Favorite was Wider Barrio. Came from off the lead to win the classic. Actually a good race. Took over in the stretch from second choice Arabian Knight and held off the 20-1 Derma Sotagaki by a length. The turf sprint, no balls, not a gelding, by the way, just his name. Wins a very close and exciting race. Big Invasion came flying and finished second. Great race, actually. The Breeders' Cup Mile, Master of Seas Cream from Out of the Clouds on the outside and Edge Borge by a nose. Another close race. The Dirt Mile, incredible race. Cody's Wish caught National Treasure late, and then National Treasure fought back, and they were all going back and forth all the way down to the end. Cody's Wish held off by a nose. Great that- win by the 4-5 favorite, Kev.
Yeah, that was some story about the kid. You know, Cody was a kid who had some rare disease.
Yep.
The horse is named for the kid. He was there at the race, and unfortunately, on the way home, suffered some complications and traveled back, and actually passed away about 2 days after the race.
Oh wow!
Just one of those tough stories. I mean,
it was fighting time. I get it, but still, it was right after the race.
It was when, not if, you know, yeah. when he was going to die, unfortunately. But he got to see his horse, his namesake, win the race. So good for the kid before he passed on.
Really incredible story. Sometimes with horse racing, with the lemonade stand a few years back and all the other things, sometimes really good things happen out of these stories. And Spiral won the Philly and Mad Turf from way off the pace at the wire. Another close race at the end. What was the last one? I'm sorry. There's one last race. Oh, Goodnight Olive won easy. And the Philly and Mass Sprint was never even really a race. The Distaff, Idiomatic, the 9-5 favorite, won it. During the stretch, it looked like any one of six horses could win it. They were all bunched up, and Idiomatic took it over. The Breeders' Cup Turf, Auguste Rodin, way off the pace, made a perfect inside move, took the rail, they gave it to him, stole it. Took it right down the gut. And then Breeders' Cup Sprint, Elite Power, the 8-5 favorite, won convincingly. A lot of favorites won, but there were a lot of close races. So if you had a long shot, you felt like you were in it for a few seconds, and then you'd lose at the very end. And that's
it would have been my type of Breeders' Cup.
Oh, you would have cleaned up. You would have hit the pick seven. Anyway, that's my story for the Breeders' Cup, Jake.
Week 9 in the books. Week 10 coming your way in the NFL season.
I didn't have a good week.
Darren 1-2, Kev 2-1, Gino 0-3. Darren 17-10, Kev 15-12, Gino an abysmal 7-20. Kev, you have the T-box. Week 10 as we get ready to play NFL week 10. Kev?
Oh, all the crappy games. I'm gonna stick with some of the better games. We talked about the game of the week was probably Jacksonville and the 49ers. Since they're playing at home, I think this is a chance for the Jacksonville to prove themselves. San Fran's still struggling a little bit. They're making the coast to coast trip. I'm gonna take Jacksonville plus the 3 points at home.
Good.
Did I see either one of yours?
Nope. No, I didn't. I wasn't going to that game. I'm a coward.
The second one, you know, one of the other top games we've talked about, Ravens and Browns. Two good defenses going against each other. I'm not really sold on Deshaun Watson yet. You know, he still has a lot to prove to me, you know, coming back after, you know, missing games this year. I don't know about the shoulder. It's under a touchdown. I've got it at 6. I'm going to take the Ravens to cover 6 points.
It's 6.5, but yeah, that's good. Yep.
And the third game, a little bit lesser game, but I think, you know, the Packers got a win last week, but I don't see much out of Jordan Love. The Steelers are doing enough to win these games. The spread's only 3.5. They're at home. I'm going to take the Steelers minus the 3.5.
All right. Darren, where are you going, Darren?
I'm going to start out in L.A., and I'm taking Detroit minus 2.5 in Chargerville. I just think they're better.
I like that pick too.
The only thing I don't like is the bye week, how they come off of it, but Chargers played a very physical game on Monday night, even though they won easily. That was a very physical game on their offense. Those guys are going to be pretty beaten up. I'll take the Lions. I'm taking the Vikings plus 2.5 at home against the Saints. I think that the Vikings are, you know, they're fighting for their lives for these playoffs. I think Flores has done a decent job on the defense, and maybe Dobbs knows more than six plays this week. Maybe he even finds a way to win that one. And I'm going to go head-to-head with Kev. I'm taking the Browns plus 6 against the Ravens. I don't think that these two teams like each other very much. I think the weather will be fine. I don't think that's going to affect it. But I think I don't love a team when they blow out their opponent the week before and expect them to come back and blow out somebody else. I think that the Ravens might win, but I think it's going to be a 3-4-point game. So I'm going to go with the Browns plus 6, or the 6.5, whatever you said. I'm taking the Vikings plus 2.5 and the Lions minus 2.5. Jake?
All right. My first game, I'm taking San Francisco.
You're going head-to-head.
Wow. I'm going head-to-head with Kev. I do think this is going to be a good game. I think Jacksonville will probably hang with them, but I think San Francisco in the end wins this by a touchdown. I think San Francisco minus the 3 in my first game. My second game, I'm taking Atlanta minus the 2 points against Arizona. I think Atlanta's got – they want to get back on the winning track after last week's game. They're not happy with the result. Hopefully Arthur Smith has learned anything about going to Bijan Robinson and Kyle Pitts. We're going to see. I'm taking Atlanta minus the 2.5. And my third game, I'm taking Buffalo minus the 7.5. Buffalo's got to do something at some point. They're going to play Denver. They're home Monday night. I take Buffalo minus the 7.5. Those are my picks for week 10 in the NFL. Let's hope I get a couple of wins here just to get back to almost not even close to being even, but we're going to try.
You got 8 weeks to go. You can turn it around quickly, my friend. Hey, you guys have any more points we wrap this very quick show up? Kev?
NCAA, real quick. Yeah. 2 points. Gotta love Tom Izzo decides, you know what? My nephew is an assistant at James Madison. So we're going to throw him a bone. We'll schedule James Madison for the first game of the season. Well, James Madison has other ideas, comes in, and beats Michigan State in overtime.
Number 4 Michigan State, by the way.
Exactly. Number 2, just to bring up my alma mater for one time, I think they were mistaken. They saw they had a chance to play in Manhattan. Well, unfortunately, they're going down to Manhattan, Kansas, and playing number 1 Kansas. How ugly is that game going to be?
Well, they're actually going to Lawrence. You got the wrong place. Kansas State plays in Manhattan. But you know what? It's still a good attempt at a joke, and I appreciate the effort.
Damn, I tried. I got confused. Damn.
Just so you know, DePaul also got upset by Purdue Fort Wayne at home, and Rutgers lost a tight one with Princeton. Not that that's a huge upset. Princeton's one of the favorites of the Ivy, but when you have a bubble NCAA Big Ten team losing – and a neutral court like that, it does stand out. College Hoops is underway, ready to roll.
Big New Jersey rivalry game.
St. John's with a victory over Stony Brook.
Yep. Patino off the snide to start off. You know, I think their defense will only get stronger as the season goes on. I'm already excited. I've watched several games already. I mean, I'm all in there in college hoop land. Any other points, boys? All right, we are the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren here with Kevin and Gino talking about the wonderful and wild and fun world of sports, where we want to see men control teams and leagues. And you know, not being sexist here, I want the sport to be about the leaders that played these sports and not about the geeks that watch them on screens like us. But, you know, download the podcast wherever you can get a podcast. You know, whether it be an Apple product, TuneIn, Spotify, whatever. You know, ask anyone that you know. Tell them to download as well. Share it. Get it out to as many people as possible. Follow us on social. Respond to my stupid questions. Give me something you want to talk about. Insult me to my face. I'm ready to go. But without any further ado, may your sports be with you.